From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Wheeler Opera House in Aspen, Colorado, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carol. Great show for everybody. Thank you, everybody. We have a great show. We got to get going. Actors Robert Wagner and Jill St. John, who we like to think of as the classy person's Brangelina, will be joining us later on to play Not My Job. But first, you know, we in the media get criticized sometimes for staying in our elite urban enclaves and never venturing out into the heartland. You know, to see what the common folk think about how things are going on in this country. And that's why we came to this remote, hardscrabble mountain town, Aspen, Colorado, and we can report the salt of the earth. They're doing obscenely well. They've got mink underwear. How do we know? Mink lowrider jeans, ladies and gentlemen. However, there is one thing even the proud owners of a $12 million two-bedroom home cannot buy. Carol Castle's voice and their home answering machine. That's true. Sorry, Mr. Stallone, you'll just have to call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT like the rest of them. That's 1-888-924-8924. Please give us a call. It is time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Christina Zerme from Ellensburg, Washington.
Hey, how are you, Christina?
Good, how are you?
I'm okay. Now, where's Ellensburg?
Smack dab in the middle of the state.
Oh, that's great. So you're convenient to basically, or equally convenient to everywhere.
Well, there are mountains. It's kind of hard to get across the mountains, but yeah.
That's cool. Do people in your town wear those funny winter boots with the fur on them that make them look like Clydesdales? Because they do here,
yeah,
and it's freaking me out.
Yeah, actually, we do.
Really? They have that?
Yeah.
My gosh, there's more of them than I thought. Christina, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a performer and the author of the novel Schrodinger's Ball, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hello.
Hi, Christina.
Hi there.
I have a pair of those boots, too, and I just wear them to the beach. That's all I wear.
Also say hello.
What?
Also say hello to the woman behind the syndicated advice column, Ask Amy, Miss Amy Dickinson.
Hey, Christina.
Hello.
What are those boots called, anyway? Are they Wookiee boots?
I think they're Uggs.
They're Uggs.
No. They're called Wookiee boots. I just named them Wookiee boots.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and author most recently of Norman Tuttle on the Last Frontier, Mr. Tom Beaudet.
Hello, Christina.
Hello, Tom.
I just want to get off the boots. I've been through Ellensburg a couple times. Beautiful country around there.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I was on my way to somewhere else, but
yeah, me too.
As I recall, it's about 4 hours to anywhere from Ellensburg.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show, Christina. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carol Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carol Castle's voice and your home answering machine. You ready
to
go? All right. Here we go. Here is your first quote.
Typical liberal media, focusing on the four guilty counts instead of the one not guilty.
That was the Hutline political newsletter summarizing, if a bit sardonically, the conservative world's reaction to the conviction on a mere four counts of perjury and obstruction of justice. Of whom?
Scooter Libby.
Indeed, Scooter.
You know, is he going to have to change his name when he's, you know,
well,
in
we have been wondering about Scooter, how Scooter will play as a prison nickname.
I don't know.
He can change it, but he'll get it back.
Of course, Scooter Libby, when the vice president's former chief of staff was convicted of perjury and obstruction of justice this week, it made many of his defenders, ironically, even more convinced of his innocence. How dare the evidence indicate beyond a reasonable doubt that he lied under oath. Evidence, as is well known, hates freedom. The real loser in this case, of course, is and has always been Vice President Cheney, who has lost one of his closest friends and trusted confidants, as well as the man who used to procure the fresh human pineal glands that extend the vice president's unnatural life.
Well, Scooter did seem pretty apologetic, didn't he? I mean, after his conviction, didn't he look right into the camera and say, pardon me?
No hidden code there.
He kind of winked.
Right.
It was a wink.
Here, Christina, is your next quote.
Plan B was to make Plan A work.
That, according to the Washington Post, is how Joint Chiefs Chairman Peter Pace summarized the White House plan for what?
Getting out of Iraq?
Not getting out of Iraq. They're not planning for that. Conducting the war there is right, so I'll give it to you. Iraq. 2 months after President Bush announced his surge plan to win the Iraq War, the Washington Post finally asked the question, well, what if it doesn't work? The answer? Don't you worry your pretty little head about it. The Bush White House says that if you want to win in Iraq, you just have to believe you will with all your might. This is known as the Tinkerbell theory of geopolitics. Everybody clap.
I believe.
I don't know why they don't just write to Amy and ask her what to do.
I know.
Or have they? You know.
Oh, yeah.
Dear Amy, I have this friend who has this military that
he's sent. Big problem. Everybody's on his back.
Now, we should say that the Democrats, for their part, introduced a bill this week that imposes standards and benchmarks for further involvement with Iraq, but it also allows President Bush to waive those requirements if he wants to. Democrats praise the flexibility of their plan. They point out that whatever happens, it will not be their fault. All right, very good, Christina. Here is your last quote.
She turned on the worst fake accent since Kevin Costner played Robin Hood. She sounded like Granny Clampett auditioning on American Idol.
That was columnist Kathleen Parker talking about someone attempting and failing, in her opinion, to recreate a Southern accent during a speech in Selma, Alabama. Who?
I have no idea.
Really? Well, I'll give you a hint. This woman, proud of her handicap, not a Southerner, though she is married to one. Any clue? She was campaigning down there in Selma.
Hillary Clinton?
Yes, very good. Last weekend, Senator Clinton took her presidential campaign to Selma to commemorate the famous civil rights march there. During her speech at a Selma church, Senator Clinton read from a Southern hymn. Now, to be fair, she was just trying to take on the cadence and voice of the hymn, but the result did sound a little bit like Scarlett O'Hara with a deviated septum. We have it. Here is Senator Clinton.
I don't feel no ways tired.
She sounds like
Amish.
Rex Harrison speaks singing the role of Daisy May in the musical Little Abner.
I have a feeling we haven't heard the last of that little sound.
Ouch.
I don't know. Is she supposed to be able to do a good Southern accent, though?
Well, you'd figure you'd pick it up by osmosis, right? Or some other process.
Right.
Over the course of breakfast table conversation. Carl, how did Christina do?
Very well, Peter. Christina had 3 correct answers, so she wins our prize.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christina. Thanks for calling. I want to remind everybody to join us nearly every week at the Chase Auditorium in downtown, sadly, flat Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org.